You can't handle the truth.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Get away from her, you bitch!
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
To infinity and beyond!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to Real Talk number 18. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Reimer.
And I'm Manny Manuel.
We've got some good stuff on the agenda today.
Mm-hmm.
Manny, what comes up first?
Well, actually, I want to give a shout out to one of my best friends.
Okay, sure.
It is her birthday today.
Okay.
Happy birthday, Pandora.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's funny, I don't know Pandora, but for some reason when you're like, I got to give a shout out to one of my best friends whose birthday it is, for some reason that's just the name that came into my head.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, it is her birthday today. And tomorrow is our friendship anniversary.
Oh.
Tomorrow.
You met the day after her birthday?
We did. We did. We met at a nightclub called Uncle Charlie's in a incredibly entertaining story that I unfortunately cannot share on air, as it does involve throwing other people under the bus that there's no need to.
I can't remember if you shared that story with me before. I think you've given me that version of the pitch before, and
yes.
I don't know if we ever got the actual story. But
yep. There is a moment in the story that means a lot to me, and I'll share it here since I'm shouting out Pandora. Mm-hmm. There was a moment we had. I bumped into her and we danced a couple songs together, and I'm dancing in the Uncle Charlie's nightclub. There is a second level that overlooks the dance floor, and she was up there and I'm on the stage dancing by myself, and the song One Headlight by the Wallflowers comes on.
Yes.
And I look up at her and we lock eyes. We see each other, and I got real cocky. And I motioned her down with like just the fingers, like come on. And as soon as I did it, I was like, oh, I'm such a fucking douchebag. And she just shrugged her shoulders. I'm like, yep. Made her way down, and then we danced a bunch more songs together, and we had a very, very lovely evening together, dancing the night away, and we basically became almost best friends. Not quite that night, but basically the next time we hung out, because she gave me her number later that night for us to meet up again, and we hung out a bunch and instant best friends.
That's very sweet.
Instant best friends, yeah. Yeah,
very
I have a multitude of magnificent memories with Pandora, and so.
A multitude of magnificent memories.
Yeah, let's go. No, not too bad. Let's see, hold on. So, let's see, it's 2024. The problem is I can never remember exactly what, I feel it's 1998. Oh.
Oh,
appropriate.
How about that?
That's
very
amazing.
Appropriate.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Although technically not this episode.
Yeah. Oh, true. It's 97 or 98. Could it be 96? No, there's no way. Could it be before then?
Just try to think about the movies you saw in the theater around that time.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Okay, so.
Well, that was half sarcastic, but that might have worked.
Hold on, 94. Oh, actually, it's 97. Thank you. Oh my God.
I can't believe that worked.
It did, because the first movie her and I went together was My Best Friend's Wedding or Addicted to Love. Those are our first two movies.
Okay, I'm not familiar with Addicted to Love.
They're both 97s.
Okay.
So it's easy. So 1997.
There you go.
Fuck. That's amazing. yeah. So a big shout out to one of my best friends and one of my close friends, Pandora. I love you to death, sweetheart. I'm definitely going to tell you that I gave you the shout out. So you'll listen. I gave her a shout out on another episode recently, and so I told her that she had to listen. She was tickled pink by the shout out.
I'm just looking up a couple of different things. One of them is the release date of Addicted to Love,
okay,
which is May 23rd, 1997. And then the other
is
My Best Friend's Wedding, which is June 20th, 1997.
Okay, so Addicted
so it's probably
to
Addicted
Love.
To Love.
Addicted
That's
to
a
love.
Quick turnaround, I got to say. I mean, it makes sense. Like, but yeah, it's a couple weeks after.
Yeah, well, nice. Like we hung out like. So I met her on a Saturday night at Uncle Charlie's.
Yeah.
And we hung out the following Wednesday. We went out dancing together again at the Blue Max.
Nice.
And then, we made plans to hang out some more. And we just became instant best friends. Yeah.
And then went to go see My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah.
Movie about friendship and love.
Yeah. And Addicted to Love, a movie about hating your exes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's great.
The movie is about hating your exes and extracting horrible revenge on them.
Yeah. This isn't around the time of the one really horrible ex story you've told me, is it?
Like the story?
Like the story.
No,
it's
no,
not
no,
that?
No.
Okay.
No, no. This is a decade before that.
Okay.
Yeah. That happened 2006.
Oh, okay.
You're like the...
Yeah, I'm talking... Yeah.
Like the story.
The story.
Yeah, 2006. Like... Yeah.
I just made a gesture to Manny that I think would understand.
Are you talking about the poker?
No. I'm talking about like... I can't even think of a...
are you talking about the story that ends up helping me and T-Bone become best
friends?
Yes,
I am. That's exactly the story 2006. I'm talking about. Okay, all right. Okay. Gotcha. Yes.
That's 2006. This is 1997. May 10th, 1997 is.
You know, there's another idea. I know you're clamoring for ideas for other podcasts, yeah. But like, I think a podcast about your romantic life.
Oh,
I mean, maybe it wouldn't last as long as this one, but it definitely, I would find it interesting. I'd find it very interesting. I don't know how many NDAs you've had to sign in your day, though. But
the only problem, like, I won't lie, like, I love telling those stories because they're.
You've got
stories.
Some fucking great stories.
Thank you. In all honesty, I have no problem sharing them in person with people. I would really
hate to
put them out in public. And while I have very rarely done something wrong when it comes to my relationships, I'm not guilt free. I've definitely made my mistakes.
Yeah.
But most of the good stories are about other things that have happened. I don't really feel like putting them and what they've done out in public. That's not fair. Despite what they did, I have forgiven everybody that has done something along those lines. So I don't. So the hard part would be like dancing around names.
Yeah. Names and identifying information and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's tempting, though. It'd be a lot of fun. I won't lie.
I don't think... I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong. We haven't known each other that long, so I don't know the full extent of it. It seems like you're...
Like over 6 years. 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah, but when a lot of these stories happen, when the bulk of your romantic history happened, yes. The bulk of the very interesting stuff, you and I were not friends. We didn't know each other.
Correct.
So it feels like... There's maybe not enough material for a weekly podcast on it. Let's say that week.
No.
Let's say that.
No, there's not. There's lots of other stories. That's my narcissism kicking in. I have enough stories to make a weekly podcast. Yeah. Whatever. Anyways, enough about me. This was about Pandora. Happy birthday to my panda bear. I love you with all my heart. I hope you had a great birthday, which is today as we're recording. And, tomorrow is our friendship anniversary, and I'll send you another text tomorrow.
Nice. Good shout out.
As in 5 days ago. Hold on. Yeah, whatever.
Math. Just, whatever the math dictates.
Whatever. Okay. Every once in a while, tragedy strikes. The movie industry is a member of their beloved inner circle has passed away, and we lost somebody that... Well, actually, let's be honest, has, while not a major part, two very important roles in the history of cinema that have affected literally millions of people. Bernard Hill passed away this past week, and he is mostly known for two roles. Depending on your preference of film, you can decide which one you like more. I definitely have mine ranked the way I don't know. So I'm going to go in ascending order. I only have three for me. He had a small role as Dr. David Hawthorne in a movie called The Ghost in the Darkness with Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas, the true story of these lions that attacked people building a railway in Africa. A really enjoyable film that if you ever see on streaming, you want to watch something kind of just kind of fun as it is to watch a movie about man-eating lions. It's a movie I really, really enjoy. I always have a great time watching it. I think it's about like a 94... or so, around there, 94, 95. Perfectly enjoyable film. He's got a pretty small role in it. But these are the two. So I'm putting his role as King Theoden in The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, and The Return of the King at number two for me. Fantastic performance.
Yeah.
Really really carries that weight of regality on him that I love. For me, I think the person that carries himself in a regal manner, even though I don't think he's ever played a king, but he has played God, and that's Morgan Freeman.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah.
How has he not played a king?
Right?
Oh, my God. Somebody needs to make that movie now.
He's played the president.
Which movie?
You'll find out.
Oh. Intriguing.
Yes.
Yeah. Honestly, pretty believable as God. Yeah. If anybody was him.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But Bernard Hill as Theoden did a really great job. One of the many great performances in those films. I know I'm heaping praise on a movie that I like to kick down every once in a while, but I'll be honest, there's a lot to like about those movies.
Very big of you.
I know, thank you. But Theoden is one of them. He is, it is a really great performance. And he really, he does. He carries himself with that regality that you want for someone that's supposed to be a king. But for me, my favorite performance of his is as Captain Smith on Titanic. I love how he has this fragility to him in that performance where he is proud that this is going to be his send-off. And he's excited to be the captain of such a magnificent ship. But he's also very hesitant to kind of trust himself. And he wants to run the ship the best way he thinks is possible, but he's also having to deal with the owner and builder of the ship trying to impress the press.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got to deal with that. And then the immense guilt over what happened leads to him following through on the old adage, the captain goes down with the ship.
That's right.
In a very powerful scene.
That's one of the better scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
And his quiet acceptance of what is coming his way is very powerful in that mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah.
That's one of the better scenes in the movie, in my opinion.
So that's my thoughts on Bernard Hill. Sam, yours?
Yeah. I don't have the third performance. Sorry, the
Ghost other
movie. Yeah, I don't have that watched, but between Lord of the Rings and Titanic, obviously his impact on cinema cannot be understated, because I'm actually just realizing this. Two films that have won 11 Oscars. Those are two massive successes between Titanic and Return of the King, and obviously Two Towers as well. But you're right. Just in both performances, what unites those is a certain grace and power that comes across. And very much always liked Theoden growing up. I mean, there's so many characters to like in those movies. As a fan of that franchise, definitely a lot to like about it. But yeah, certainly someone we're going to miss. We definitely look for him in next year's In Memoriam Emporium when we're going over great performances, because those are two of them right there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. All right, a big thank you, Bernard. We tip our cap to you, and thank you for your contributions to movies. Our weekly question. This is a follow up to an episode we did 2 weeks ago, when we wrapped up 1997. So I posed the question out there: what is your favorite 1997 film? Are you ready? I got some answers in here. From a friend of mine, actually, technically, these are all friends of mine, Josh Pastorek. His favorite film from 1997 is Good Will Hunting.
Good answer.
From another good friend of mine who I used to work with when I worked at Turbo. His name is Paul Houle. He gave us two answers. Good Will Hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And Donnie Brasco.
You know what? I had Donnie Brasco recommended to me by a friend, by a coworker, actually.
I believe you would really like it.
Yeah.
Yes. From the aforementioned Pandora.
Oh.
Her favorite film of 1997 appears to be The Game.
Nice.
Yeah.
I wonder who recommended that to her.
Ooh.
Did you recommend it to her? Or?
No. Were we friends yet? I guess it would depend on release date.
I can find that out for you.
Okay. PFG Ray Salmond.
Oh, nice.
He answered his favorite film, a movie that you thoroughly enjoyed, with an actor that you, I think, are hoping to see more of, Kevin Kline's performance in In-N-Out.
Oh, good. Yeah. No, from what I've gathered, I've kind of seen the best of Kevin Klein between Dave and In-N-Out. I don't know if that's accurate.
It's up there.
Yeah.
You should watch The Ice Storm and The Big Chill, and you should see his Oscar-winning performance in A Fish Called Wanda.
Mm.
And if it ever hits streaming, but I've heard, I think there's rights problems, French Kiss is very enjoyable as he plays a French thief. So he has a delicious French accent.
Okay, I can see him. I can see him in something like that.
Yeah,
I'd be on board.
Oh, and I Love You to Death, which is a movie I talked to you about before.
I remember you bringing that up.
It's like Coen Brothers light is the way I've described it.
The Game, yeah. September 12th, 1997.
Okay, okay. So we were friends then.
Yeah,
right, it's possible. Doug Thompson, brother of PFG Sean Thompson,
mm-hmm.
aka T-Bone. His favorite film is Boogie Nights.
Great picks so far. No complaints.
PFG, Adam Lazzanero. Busy boy.
Busy boy.
Yeah. New father. Second time. Two-time father.
Two-timing father?
Two-timing father. that was a joke.
Yeah.
For those who listen. Adam Lazzanero's favorite 1997 film is The Game.
Also a good choice.
Yeah. We're doing pretty good here.
Mm-hmm.
Friend of mine, Scott Mallinson. He listed three films. The Fifth Element.
Not one I enjoyed, but I get it.
The Devil's Advocate.
Didn't see it.
Yeah. And Mimic.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Scott.
Yeah.
Going off board mm-hmm. for a lot of these.
Yeah. I haven't seen Mimic. Former schoolmate of mine, Sarah Dawood, her favorite film, Good Will Hunting.
Good one.
And last, a former client of mine at Manitan, a good friend, Selena Irene, her favorite films, The Fifth Element and Men in Black.
Okay, big sci-fi fan, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really wish The Fifth Element resonated with me a little bit more. I really wanted to like that one.
That's fair. That's fair. All right, and then with May 4th having just passed us by, I posed the question, who is your favorite Star Wars character? And, of course, we got the answer from Little Baby Wesley. What do you think his favorite?
His answer is Darth Vader.
Not quite.
Anakin Skywalker?
Correct.
Okay.
That's fucked up, Wes.
Yeah.
That's truly fucked up, Wes. The more I think about it, the very fact.
I don't think it's that fucked up.
That means that you're like, Hayden Christensen's a good performance.
Is he specifying that it's Hayden Christensen's Anakin Skywalker?
It says Anakin Skywalker.
I think that includes Darth Vader, does it not?
I don't think it does.
No? Those are two different things?
Because what?
Tell me.
What series of films does he prefer the most? The prequels.
Which is the story of
Anakin Skywalker.
Becoming Darth Vader.
Becoming, but not Darth Vader.
Hmm.
He is not Darth Vader.
Yeah.
That's like watching a movie about Clark Kent. And he becomes Superman at the end. You don't like Superman. He doesn't do any Superman shit.
Yeah.
He does Clark Kent shit. This is Anakin Skywalker as Anakin Skywalker.
I would love to get confirmation because I could see a world where he says Anakin Skywalker to include both Hayden Christensen and Anakin and original trilogy
and Jake
Darth
Lloyd.
Vader. Yeah.
And he's including Jake Lloyd in that as well.
Is that true?
He has. It's Anakin Skywalker. He's literally telling me, I like the character Anakin Skywalker.
Okay.
So that means you like everybody that played that. I like that character.
But, okay, so here's the thing.
Yep, I'm listening.
I know you're going to pass this along to me of what my favorite character is.
Totally am.
So my answer to this is one of two. It's either Han Solo.
Yep.
Or it's Darth Vader.
Yep.
I do not think Jake Lloyd's a good actor, as you know.
When you say Darth Vader, I don't think of Anakin Skywalker. He is now a different person.
Yeah, but if you, I don't know, it's a tough line. Because if you point to Hayden Christensen in those movies and you say, is that Darth Vader? You say, yes.
No.
No?
He has not become Darth Vader yet. He is Anakin Skywalker.
All right.
He's Anakin Skywalker. He becomes Darth Vader at the end of The Revenge of the Sith.
Okay. Those are two separate people. Those are two separate people to you.
Let me ask you this. You've seen Batman Begins.
I have.
You've seen the little boy outside that watches his parents. Is that Batman?
Hmm. That's fair. That's a fair comparison.
It's not. He has not become Batman yet. He hasn't.
Yeah.
It's Bruce Wayne. Anakin Skywalker has not become Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. if somebody feels differently, if they feel that Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader are the same person because they are the same person, that is fine.
They have the same body, the same flesh and blood.
I'm just telling you the way I feel and the way I see it.
Yeah.
If your favorite character is Darth Vader, you wouldn't put Anakin Skywalker as your answer.
That's fair.
Who's your favorite superhero? Superman. Oh, I mean Clark Kent. Is Spider-Man your favorite character? No, I like Peter Parker.
I will say that there are some superheroes where that line is blurred a little bit. For example, Iron Man's a good example of someone where the alter ego and the Superman the superhero identity are pretty indistinguishable.
Yep.
They're opposite sides of the same coin.
And I can understand that because it's not a secret identity.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. At one point it is. God, what an amazing... it's tangent. That moment in the theater. I watched that movie in theaters, Iron Man, when I was like 11 years old.
So did I.
Yeah. And that moment of I am Iron Man at the end, fucking chills. Absolute chills. We did that movie for the podcast once, didn't we? Or no? We haven't done Iron Man? Fuck, we're going to need to find an excuse to do that. That's a great movie. That first Iron Man is fantastic. All right. Anyway, that's off topic.
So I'm totally throwing Wes under the bus.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it on purpose because of what happened today in the group chat.
What, he said that his favorite Star Wars movie is Sith?
Yes.
That's not really that bad, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's abhorrently wrong. And I'm only doing this because I have the platform to say it. Wes has to listen to this in his ears as he listens to the podcast. I'm really just taking advantage of the fact that Wes can't reply to me right now.
Oh, he can text you.
Oh,
he
can text me all he wants.
He's probably doing a text up right now.
That's fine. Text away. I'm going to block you since I'm done this episode.
Great. So if I see Wes out of the group chat, I'll know why.
Yes. But let's see. Let's pose this question. Wes, when you say your favorite character is Anakin Skywalker, is it Anakin Skywalker / Darth Vader, or is it Anakin Skywalker? Now, I believe his answer will be Anakin Skywalker because he's been pressuring me to watch one of those fucking cartoons. I think it's Rebels.
Yeah, I haven't seen any
where it's
of those.
All Anakin. It's a story. I think it's the story between clones and Sith. I think. It's his whole training story. So I personally think his favorite character is Anakin Skywalker, not Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but I took my opportunity to throw Wes under the bus because I like doing it.
Yeah, you do like doing that.
Okay.
All right.
Sam, your favorite Star Wars character?
It's either Vader or Han Solo.
Okay.
I honestly can't decide, and I am talking about original trilogy Vader. Let's say post accident Darth Vader, post being burned alive Darth Vader. If there needs to be a division somewhere, I don't know. Okay. At what moment does Darth Vader begin? Is it when the Emperor declares him Vader? Yes. Is that the demarcation?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I mean, just say Vader. Say Vader. Yeah. Can't believe. I mean, we've talked about all the Star Wars movies. We have episodes on all of them.
Yeah.
I can't believe these conversations permeate. I think we've had these arguments before. I can't fucking remember.
I don't think so.
Maybe not.
I'm just being a dick.
Classic. That's why I feel so familiar. Yeah, this is like, I'm having major deja vu right now. This is crazy.
My favorite character has been Yoda for a long time. Mm. And the thing is the prequels hurt my love of Yoda? Because he is a very bad general.
Yeah, he's not good.
Yeah, so whatever. My love of Yoda is from the original series, and Han Solo as well. But my love of Solo dropped after the movie, after the Solo Star Wars movie, and it got hurt a little bit by The Force Awakens, I won't lie. So I'm an original trilogy Han Solo fan.
Yeah, it's true. I like Han Solo, his arc in specifically The Force Awakens. Mm. I think his arc is one of the better parts of that movie.
It's not bad.
Yeah. Trying to think of, his arc through that entire movie, because I guess he's not really, he is in another one of the new trilogy movies, isn't he?
Sure is.
Oh, that's too bad. I'll also just give a shout out. I mean, one of the things that Star Wars does right, for better or for worse, even in their bad movies, is villains. I think they do villains really well. So I would say my favorite character in the prequel trilogy is probably Darth Maul. Like, as far as characters that don't show up in the other parts of the trilogy, or that were introduced in that prequel trilogy, let's say. Mm. And then maybe for the sequels, I would say Kylo Ren.
He does show up later, though.
Oh, true. But he was in, he was introduced in the prequels, so
true.
I'm going to
keep
him in there.
Okay.
But yeah. Spoilers for whatever movie that was. I think I remember which, but by mentioning which movie it is, that is a spoiler. Yeah. So, so I'll say that. But yeah. Got to give some love to Darth Maul and to Kylo Ren as well.
Yeah, okay, I can go with that. All right, let's get into the Letterboxd Showdown. A new one has risen up called A Quiet Place, the best films with limited dialogue. In this chatty world, a wordless story is a baraka. But finding a silent movie in these modern times is like a quest for fire on a naked island. Not all is lost, however. Talk-free fantasias and sidewalk stories with very limited dialogue are still being made somewhere by mad gods, illusionists, and mon oncle. From red turtles to red balloons, this is a duel for the very best films without all the chit-chat. So grab your three iron, open Dr. Caligari's cabinet, and step away from the city lights of the metropolis into a quiet place on a silent night where you'll find real bears, stop-motion sheep, and hundreds of beavers having le bal. Less blathering and more body language. The stuff of robot dreams.
Those write-ups are pretty good.
They're not bad. Like them, yeah. They're not bad. Okay, so here are the top 20 films with limited dialogue. Now, I truly believe there's a couple in here that are, in all honesty, some I've never heard of, but a couple in here that I think there's a little too much dialogue for it to be in here, but whatever. All right, so at number 20, a movie called The Passion of Joan of Arc.
Never seen it, but I've heard it's excellent.
Okay, same here. Mm-hmm. It's a 1928 film. Mm-hmm. Next up, a movie I haven't seen, but I've seen clips of. I think everyone in the world. Oh, no, that's a different one I'm thinking of. But this is City Lights.
Yeah.
Chaplin film.
Yeah. You were about to say...
Modern Times.
Yeah.
Which is on the list.
Okay.
Which we'll get to.
I've only seen one Chaplin, and it's not that.
Same here. So. I don't think my Chaplin made the list. It didn't. Brutal.
Hmm.
Okay. Next up, a movie we review for the podcast, Nosferatu.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
Same.
I mean, I got it insofar as it was, you know, groundbreaking and revolutionary and interesting at the time. Not interesting now.
Its historical significance we understood.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. At number 17, a movie I believe you and I differ greatly on our opinions. I know for a fact my opinion differs very differently from the majority of the PFGs. Mm. At number 17, we have The Zone of Interest.
Oh, yeah. Really? That made the list?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, like, quality of the movie aside, just I don't think of that as like a borderline silent film.
I know.
It has a great use of sound in it. For the record, I did give it 3 out of 5. I am not I am not in the group that thinks that this is a masterpiece.
Yes.
Granted, you and I are a minority in that. Yes. In that, right?
And I understand that.
And I understand what people see. It just didn't affect me the same way.
Correct.
So it didn't get that emotional response from me. So that's why it doesn't get the high rating. So yeah, honestly, a bit curious to see that on there.
Mm-hmm.
Both because of the criteria and because I just don't like it that much. But. Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
There's one coming up that's ranked really high. That is a movie I'll get to it. Next up, 1924 Buster Keaton movie, Sherlock Jr.
I haven't seen any Buster Keaton.
I've seen one, and I loved it.
The General has been on my watch list for a long time. Long time.
Next up, a 2017 film I've never heard of. It's called A Ghost Story. Oh, it's directed by David Lowery. Amazing.
Oh, why have I heard of this? I recognize this this poster.
Holy shit, a 3.8.
Hmm. Casey Affleck, Rooney Mara.
Nice.
Hmm.
Okay, I'm going to have to check something. I told you about David Lowery. He's the guy that's putting Forky in all his movies.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Wouldn't be in this one, though.
No, because it was
pre-Forky.
Yeah, it was pre-Forky.
Pre-Forky. Next up, a movie that I wouldn't have thought of, but it definitely does have limited dialogue for the majority of the film. At number 14, we have Castaway.
Oh, yeah. Again, depends how loose you want to get with the definition of limited dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is speaking with a volleyball for mm-hmm. a large portion of the movie.
Yep.
It's not, I mean, yes, he's not speaking to other humans, but he is speaking to a volleyball. I really like Castaway.
Me
Castaway
too.
Is a fantastic movie.
We're definitely reviewing that for 2000, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, have to.
Wicked. Okay, next up is a movie from, let's see, 2016, I've never heard of. Oh, it's an animated film called The Red Turtle. Oh.
That was nominated for Best Animated Feature, I think.
Was it? Okay. The dialogue-less film follows the major life stages of a castaway on a deserted tropical island populated by turtles, crabs, and birds.
Oh, well, that's I seriously thought you were accidentally reading the plot synopsis to Castaway for a second there.
So did I.
Yeah, it was nominated for Best Animated Feature Film. I just want to check really quick who it lost to. Zootopia.
Oh, a worthy loss.
Yeah. Good year. Zootopia, Kubo, Moana, something called My Life as a Zucchini, and The Red Turtle.
Oh, I like Zootopia, and I like Moana. I was blown away by Kubo.
Kubo's really good.
Good. Okay, at number 13, a movie that was nominated for Best Foreign Film last year, Perfect Days.
Oh, I didn't wind up seeing it.
Yeah.
Too bad. I think it's still on my watch list.
Could it really been this silent?
I guess it must have been.
Who knows? All right. At number 11, I believe this was nominated for Best Animated Feature this year, Robot Dreams.
Yeah, it was. I didn't wind up seeing it.
Yeah. I do remember hearing that there wasn't a lot of talking in it.
Hmm.
Next up is a movie I've only heard about. Oh, okay. This is by the same guy that did The Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer.
Hmm.
It's a movie called Under the Skin, starring Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, I've heard of that. I think it's based on an anime.
Mm. All right. Yeah. Cool. Okay. That's number 10. Hmm. And number 9, a movie that you and I both recently watched. Best Picture winner, The Artist.
Oh, yeah. I kind of expected that to be on there, but I think it's a worthy inclusion.
Yep, it's fine. At number 8, movie you just mentioned off-air, Metropolis.
Yeah, I fully expected that to be on there. That I haven't seen, but it has a reputation of being, you know, far, far before its time.
Yeah. At number 7, another Chaplin film, Modern Times, which everybody that's had any experience watching movies has seen the clip of.
Which one is that?
The production line.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. At number 6, a movie I've never heard of. 1967 called Playtime.
Not familiar.
All right. Clumsy Monsieur Hulot finds himself perplexed by the intimidating complexity of a gadget-filled Paris. He attempts to meet with a business contact, but soon becomes lost. His roundabout journey parallels that of an American tourist. And as they weave through the inventive urban environment, they intermittently meet, developing an interest in one another. They eventually get together at a chaotic restaurant, along with several other quirky characters.
Hmm.
Okay. All right. 4.2.
Not familiar at all.
All right. The top 5 are all movies that we have seen. Or, nope. Sorry. There's one I haven't. And there might be one you haven't. I'm unsure.
Okay.
But number 5, this is... I don't believe this belongs on the list, but this makes the list because this is the best film where the main character has limited dialogue, but there's a lot of dialogue in this movie. At number 5, they have Drive.
Right?
I don't think it belongs here.
There's some great scenes of dialogue in that movie, though. Not necessarily with the driver, but...
Albert Brooks is amazing.
Yeah, Albert Brooks has a fantastic scene with Bryan Cranston in the garage.
Yes.
Oh, dude. That's a fucking great scene.
Yeah. This doesn't belong on the list. In my opinion. It's only the main character who has limited dialogue. Everyone else is quite talkative.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably a stretch.
Number 4, it makes sense to be here. And number 4, A Quiet Place.
Uh-huh. I mean, it's named after the list is named after it, so it makes total sense.
Mm-hmm. And number 3, this is the one I'm unsure if you've seen, and I won't technically count this as one I've seen, as I haven't seen it. I've never watched it start to finish ever. Number 3, Fantasia.
No, I never have.
Okay.
Yeah.
But this isn't the one that I haven't seen. And number 2, I haven't seen this, but everything I've seen, there appears to be dialogue. Perhaps you've seen this one, and you can let me know. And number 2 is 2001, A Space Odyssey.
There's very much dialogue. I honestly think it does fit. It's a 3-hour long movie, I think. 2.5, maybe.
Okay.
Something like that. the first half hour to 45, probably closer to half hour, no dialogue at all. It's kind of told in sections, maybe about four different sections, and in like two of them, there's none to very little. But yeah, there is a whole section of the very famous section of the film. I'm sorry, I can't let you do that. Or Daisy, like the Hal has plenty of dialogue.
Yeah.
But maybe plenty's a stretch.
Okay.
I don't know. On a a word count basis, there's a lot of dialogue in this movie. On a words per minute basis, there's probably not a lot.
All right. So you feel like this is worthy on the list? Like
this is more worthy than Drive.
Okay. All right. And the number one film would probably, if I sat down and really thought about this, it would be my number one. At number one, we have WALL-E.
Oh, I didn't even think about that one. Yeah, totally. Probably because, again, the back two-thirds of the movie, the final third of the movie has quite a lot of dialogue. But first third is basically a silent film.
Yep.
And the second third is pretty close.
Yeah. I love that it's number one.
Oh, man, I didn't even think about that. It's a great pick.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah.
So speaking of it, what movies did you have in mind?
Let me just pull this back up here. I kind of struggled. So I did have A Quiet Place. I did have, I had A Quiet Place. Cabinet of Dr. Caligari is one that I watched recently.
I thought you would have that.
That I really enjoyed. Part of it was the theater experience and watching it with a professional pianist playing an original score. I wasn't sure if Coda would qualify.
I have it.
Yeah, okay. So I've had Coda and A Quiet Place kind of on the same line, because even though there are more spoken words in Coda, I feel like if A Quiet Place qualifies, Coda does as well. Because there's plenty of talking, just not audible dialogue.
Yes.
It kind of depends on whether you quantify ASL as dialogue.
Yep.
So, or ESL? ESL.
No, the ESL is English as a second language.
Ah, shit.
ASL is American,
American Sign Language. Yeah, okay. I was thinking English Sign Language, but yeah. ASL. It depends on whether you qualify sign language as a language.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, those are kind of the main ones. Coda, Dr. Caligari. I love the WALL-E pick. That would definitely be my number one.
So I had Coda as well, and then the only other one I had that wasn't already on the list was The Kid, which is the Chaplin film I've seen.
Oh, yeah. That's also the Chaplin film that I've seen.
Yeah.
It's just The Kid. Very fun. Honestly, it's been probably about 5 or 6 years since I've seen The Kid, and I've only seen it the one time, so I'm probably due for a rewatch. However, I remember audibly laughing. Like, not just, like, blowing air out of my nose, like, oh, that was kind of funny. Like, his comedy is very timeless.
I know.
It's very good.
I would really like to watch Gold Rush and Modern Times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's get into what we've been watching. Sam, you got three films under your belt. What you got for me?
Yeah, so why don't we just start with this, since it already came up in conversation. So The Artist from 2011. This was the Manny Movie Club pick by... Who picked this one?
Rochelle.
Rachel, all right. When George, a silent movie superstar, meets Pepe Miller, a dancer, sparks fly between the two. However, after the introduction of talking pictures, their fortunes change, affecting their dynamic. There's been a lot of talk in the group chat about this movie, and in the sort of side group chat.
Yep.
Movies about the transition from silent films to talkies have a pretty good success rate. This is the third that I can think of that I've seen.
I should make you guys watch the other one, and I guarantee you will not get high marks.
For some reason, this is just a very interesting time where many prominent people's lives are thrown into upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
And something about this era is just so intriguing. And I think The Artist does a really good job of playing with the form of the silent film. It was the first silent film to win Best Picture in something like, oh, I don't know, 80 years.
Pretty close.
Something like that. I remember following the Oscars, but not really watching the movies at this time. It's 2011, so I'm like 14 years old, 15 years old, something like that.
I'm about to get married.
Yeah. So I'm not really watching the Best Picture winners. I'm just kind of aware of their existence. So I remember this winning, and I remember thinking, like, I mean, I'm 15 years old. No 15-year-old these days is interested in silent film, at least none that I know. So back then, I kind of scoffed at it. I was like, oh, it's kind of pretentious, you know? It's the Hollywood elites, and it's the, you know, it's just the, it's it's the artistes of the world who think that this is worth watching. There's no way this is ever going to be worth my time. And I finally got around to watching it, obviously, and I very much enjoyed it. I think that John Desjardins is fully deserving of the Best Actor win.
Ooh.
Best Actor win, question mark? Okay, yeah. Yeah, I love his performance. His facial acting is so good, and he's very expressive. Bernice Bayo is not somebody that I'm familiar with, but she is radiant, so beautiful and full of personality. Mm-hmm. She gives a fantastic performance. And then, is it Michelle Hazana? Oh man, I can't pronounce your name. I'm sorry, sir. The director of the film, created a very good film. Mm-hmm. There's one scene in the middle that I won't spoil, where the form of the silent film is played with quite a lot, I wouldn't call it a fourth wall break per se, but it's very much drawing attention to the form of the silent film and the lack of dialogue and the lack of sound. One of the most, it's such a brilliant use of the form that I bet there's filmmakers all over the world kicking themselves for not thinking of it first. It's a dream sequence. That's exceptional. There's a number of very good scenes in this movie. I think the chemistry between the two leads is palpable, mm-hmm. even without dialogue. I think they have phenomenal chemistry and attraction between them. The era that this takes place in is just very fascinating to me. And I think this is just a movie that was tailor-made for my enjoyment. I gave it a 4. I don't think it ever really approached a 5. Whether or not it deserved to win Best Picture, I actually don't have it in front of me right now. Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's probably... I'm very curious to hear. Okay, let's hear it.
So I want to really stress that and reiterate that you said that he was worthy of his Best Actor win.
I think without having the other performances in front of me, because I'm sure you're going to list off a performance that should beat him.
Yes.
Without having them in front of me, it's a very, very good performance.
It is.
And barring another shoe-in, I'd have no problem with the win, but you're about to tell me why there's another worthy candidate.
He beat Brad Pitt for Moneyball.
Oh! Oh, no!
And so that means The Artist beat Moneyball for Best Picture.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, Moneyball made my top 20 of all time. One of my favorite movies of all time. Definitely my favorite sports movie of all time. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I like The Artist better than Moneyball, because I don't. And I don't like Jean Dujardin's performance better than Brad Pitt in Moneyball. Yeah, that one hurts. But, you know, c'est la vie.
Yeah. I'm not... Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4. I've only seen 4 of the Best Picture nominees from this year. Oh, 5. Sorry. It's kind of a weak year.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of 2011 films that I know off the top of my head that are excellent. I'm pretty sure... Is Drive a 2011? I know it's not an Oscar nominee, but it's... Drive might be a 2011. I can't even really think of many 2011s at all. But
okay, so here are the nominees for Best Picture.
Okay, let's hear it.
The Artist,
mm-hmm.
The Descendants, which I've seen, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which I've heard is atrociously bad.
I've heard the same.
The Help, haven't seen it.
Me neither.
I own it. Hugo.
Haven't seen it.
Own it. Same, haven't seen it. Midnight in Paris.
Have seen. That got nominated, eh? Interesting. That's a 3-star movie for me.
So did Woody Allen for director.
Wow.
Yeah. Haven't seen it. Then we have Moneyball.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have The Tree of Life. Hated it.
I've heard that's a very polarizing film.
Hated it. And War Horse.
I've seen 3 of those. That's not a lot.
Looks like we're going to have some fun in 2011.
I guess so. Or not a lot of fun.
Yeah. Jean Desjardins beat out Damien Bashir for A Better Life. Haven't seen it, but I have seen George Clooney in The Descendants. He's magnificent.
Haven't seen it.
Gary Oldman for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. He's magnificent. And Brad Pitt for Moneyball.
Wow, I really haven't seen a lot that year.
Yeah. Fincher. There was a Fincher film that year, too.
Hold on. Is that Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Nailed it.
Never seen it.
So fucking good. All right, so Artist. So I obviously watched this for the MMC as well, and I hadn't seen it since I saw it in 2011. 3 out of 5 for me. This is a technically proficient film. In 2011, I was blown away by what I saw because it was the first modern silent film I'd ever seen. And the way that they paid homage to that era and the way they did everything was breathtaking. I agree. Jean Desjardins winning Best Actor doesn't bother me. Him winning over Clooney and Pitt a little bit does, but it's a really great performance. Not a robbery, but I don't think it's really going to hold up. On this rewatch, I was completely unimpressed because the novelty of doing a modern-day silent film was lost. Did it look gorgeous? Yeah, it did. Were the performances great? They sure were. Did everything on screen look magnificent? It sure did. But I was pretty fucking bored because I'd already seen everything. And I kind of feel like, for me personally, silent films aren't very rewatchable. Because one of the things I love about films is dialogue. And silent films obviously lack it. Hmm. So I found myself a little uninterested. And that's why it was a 3 out of 5. Everything that all of you wrote, because I think I was the only one in the group that had seen this before, all of you guys being wowed and over, not, I don't want to say overwhelmed, but wowed and impressed and everything, was everything I felt back in 2011. I'll be very interested to see how you guys feel in, say, 5 to 8 years when you watch it again.
Here's the thing. Yeah, so 5 to 8 years is a good timeline because I don't think I will get a hankering to see this movie again anytime soon. And it's not because the movie's bad.
It's not. It's not a bad movie.
Yeah, I think it's just because if I get that feeling in my head, or let me try to find the right words for this. Any feeling I have that would lead me to wanting to rewatch The Artist will first lead me to wanting to rewatch those 5-star movies for me. This is a 4-star. It's a great movie, but it's four. It's just worse than those other two, in my opinion. So I will, if I'm like, I want to watch a really emotional movie about the switch from the 1920s to the 1930s and the taking over of talkies and the and watch a number of silent film gods get usurped and have to deal with the repercussions and the change, the life change that comes with that. I will have 2 other films to watch first before watching this one. So 5 to 8 years might even be ambitious at the rate that I'm able to rewatch films.
I know. And I'm, like I said, that's why I didn't push back on all your guys' ratings, because I felt exactly the same as each and every one of you when I watched it in 2011. 13 years later, I'm like, yeah, very good movie. Not as entertaining.
That's interesting.
And if I ever get a hankering to watch a silent film, I'm going to watch one I haven't seen.
Another great physical performance scene in this movie, by the way, is when Pepe puts on George's jacket.
Yes.
And does the sort of half acting. That's a visually beautiful scene.
Yep.
That's such a good scene.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right, what do you got next?
Next up, I got to scroll back to it. Yeah, let's talk about this one. So I watched this film called The Greatest Hits this week.
Oh, right.
A love story centering on the connection between music and memory and how they transport us, sometimes literally. This is written and directed by Ned Benson, starring Lucy Boynton, Justin H. Min, and David Corenswet. The only person I knew in this movie was Justin H. Min. He has a role in, what's that TV show? Umbrella Academy. He's one of the kids. And I like him in that. So I decided to watch this, and I thought, you know, the plot sounds like it's tailor-made for me. I'm very interested in sci-fi movies, which this has kind of a sci-fi bent, even though it's not classified as such on IMDb.
That's weird.
And it's also very centered on music. It's two genres that tend to speak to me, and I decided to take it up. And the plot's not, once I figured out what the plot was going to be as I was watching the movie, because I went in basically blind, I was like, oh, I think I'm really going to like this. Unfortunately, Lucy Boynton and Justin H. Min really don't have a lot of chemistry.
Ouch.
I did not believe for a second that they were slowly falling in love. I don't know how much I can actually talk about this movie without spoiling it. I do actually encourage people to watch it, in spite of the fact, I'll just get to it now, in spite of the fact that I gave it a 2. I just didn't enjoy this that much. I thought the execution was far poorer than the actual idea. I think some people will really get a kick out of this, depending on how much they buy into the relationship and and depending on how fascinated they are by the concept of the movie. It's not really a spoiler, so I guess I'll just say it because it's right at the beginning of the movie. The film is basically about a woman who can revisit memories from her previous relationship based on them hearing songs for the first time. It's kind of presented as time travel. That's the phrase that's used through the movie, that she's able to travel through time. My main issue with it is that in the actual presentation of these scenes, it's kind of not time traveling. It's almost indistinguishable from memory. It's largely about her remembering these moments where she heard these songs for the first time. Which,
is she able to alter the events of that time?
I think I won't answer that without it being a spoiler, but let's just say the plot largely centers on her trying to. But
okay,
for much of the movie, it's just kind of accepted that she can't. She's just visiting these moments in her head. So the presentation of that was a little bit messy. The chemistry between the leads was unfortunate. I think the movie looks really cool. The visual language they use to transport her to these different moments is really fun. And I'm just really bummed that the concept didn't resonate with me. So yeah, I did give it a 2. I still think people should give this a shot because mm-hmm. I think other people might like it more than me. But like, I would love a remake of this sometime. Like, I know it just came out, but I want a remake with a more competent director. Like, give me John Carney's version of this. And I'm there. I'm absolutely there.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Like, that's honestly a lot of the Letterboxd reviews that I read were basically calling this, like, discount John Carney. And it kind of is. It's just not nearly as competent. But a movie about how music can transport you to a different time in your life is such an interesting concept. And taking that literally and kind of changing it into a bit of a sci-fi concept is really cool. I just want it done better than this. So, yeah. 2 out of 5 for greatest hits. Do you have any plans to check this out?
I did until you gave it a 2.
Yeah. You might like it. I don't. I think some people in the group chat will like this, which is why I'm not giving it like a blanket skip it.
Mm-hmm.
I think people who are into these sort of sci-fi romance time travel-y stuff might get a kick out of it, but it's just not good enough. It's not well made enough.
Yeah, this was on my radar, and then your 2 backed me off pretty hard.
This is like, you can probably sense it. I was really bummed about that. I was super excited when I figured out what this was about.
I thought this concept sounded incredible.
Yeah, it's just not good.
And I was so excited when you were watching it.
Yeah. Okay, so that was a bummer. Let's go to something a little more exciting. I don't know if you've seen this yet.
Probably not.
It's another 2024. This is Challengers.
Nope.
Tashi, a former tennis prodigy turned coach, turned her husband into a champion. But to overcome a losing streak, he needs to face his ex-best friend and Tashi's ex-boyfriend. This is directed by Luca Guadagnino, I think is how you say it. The director of Call Me By Your Name. It is written by Justin Karitsky's, is how I'm going to say that. Starring Zendaya, Mike Feist, and Josh O'Connor. This is currently sitting at an 82 on Metacritic. So
nice.
Definitely very highly rated. I will say this about Luca Guadagnino. His visual storytelling is outstanding. One of the main things I remember about Call Me By Your Name is how gorgeous looking it is. And this is no exception. For a movie, what I was told about this film is that there is actually the actors did very little tennis. Like, they learned about the sport for it and they did their research about it, I'm sure. But a large number of the tennis scenes in this movie use stunt doubles or other kind of methods to obscure the fact that it's not really the stars playing.
Yep.
With knowing that, I think the tennis scenes look exceptional in this movie. I think they're some of the best looking sports scenes I've ever seen.
Holy
They're very good looking, and the tennis scenes are intense. There's some creative camera angles. There's some creative cinematography, and I think the movie looks excellent and keeps a very fast pace throughout the movie. And what I like about the sports scenes, I think in particular, beyond the look, is that the stakes are always so clear. It's always the end of the world. Like every single tennis match it feels like life or death.
Okay.
And that really comes from the characterization of these people. One of the things I like about Challengers and the way that it's written is that the people that it focuses on are kind of shitty people. It, in my opinion, does not attempt to glorify them. It reminds me in a lot of ways of Whiplash, where the pursuit of just winning, just the competition of it. Winning is its own reward, and everything else is secondary, to a point where you're kind of asking yourself by the end of the movie, is this really worth it? Is all of this competition really worth it? I think people who liked Whiplash will find something they recognize in Challengers. That is also not to mention all of the very beautiful people in this movie that are soaking wet and half naked for half of it. This is a... While I've only talked about the sports aspect of this movie up to this point, it should be noted this is a very steamy movie. This is a romance. This is a very erotic movie, is probably the correct word to use. There's a lot of people almost having sex in all of these scenes. So I'll kind of leave it there, other than to say maybe the lone thing that I didn't like, I've sat on the ending of this movie a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the last 60 seconds of this movie, I kind of don't know if I like.
Interesting.
I'm not sure if I do. I could be convinced otherwise, and maybe if I rewatch it, I'll feel otherwise. But I kind of came away from the movie going, that's it? That's what we were building to?
So, like, the opposite of Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
The ending fucking
makes the ending just fucking ruins you.
Yeah.
Yeah. The exact... I had no emotional response to the ending of this movie.
Interesting.
Maybe others feel otherwise. I know Wes has said this is his favorite movie of 2024 so far. So Wes, I know you're listening. Like, tell me what I missed at the end of this movie, but I just didn't get it. It does get a 4. It's a very enjoyable ride, very competently well made. Zendaya, I will also just say of Zendaya, anybody who says that she's going to get nominated for Dune needs to watch this, because she's 1,000 times better in this movie than she is in Dune. Like, she gives a great performance, and Mike Feist is somebody that I'm going to continue to keep an eye on, because he's been great in everything that I've seen him in. He was in West Side Story, he was in Pinball, which was a kind of underground-ish sort of movie that
I loved.
We thought it was great. Yeah. We both gave it 4 stars. It didn't get great reviews, and it didn't get a great audience response, but you and I both really liked it. In Challengers, his performance as Art is very good, and you can feel the competition in him. So I'll leave it there. Manny, I think you'll get a kick out of Challengers.
Oh, I'm looking forward to watching it. I just wanted to throw Wes under the bus again.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Him saying that this is his favorite film of 2024. He's watched 9 films.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow. Cool.
Yeah.
You've watched 9 movies.
It's like being the best CFL team. It's like, yeah, you had a 1 in 9 chance. Yeah. So what?
Yeah. That was just I just really wanted to take another shot at Wes.
Yeah. I think this is, I can't remember where I have this on my list. It's not number one, though. And I haven't seen 9 films.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really have spent no time watching 2024s.
Yeah. Shit, what have I seen? Hold on, I have my lists. I won't give you the exact order, but I've only seen 5. I've only seen 5 films this year.
I might be at like 8.
Yeah. In no particular order, they are Challengers, Civil War,
7.
Dune, Greatest Hits, and Musica.
Yeah, 7.
You've seen 7?
I've seen 7. Giving out 2 5s, though.
Way to go.
One's a documentary, though.
I have not given out any 5s. None. Didn't give out any 5s for 2024.
You haven't seen Dune 2?
I've seen Dune 2.
You didn't give it a 5?
Gave it a 4.
You're a fuck. This podcast is over.
I don't think I posted my review in the chat because I was afraid of getting flamed because you all gave it a 5. It's a great movie. It's a 4.
You're a piece of shit.
What's the problem?
I don't even want to talk the rest of the night.
Yeah, all right. Fine by me.
It's the Sam podcast night. Fuck yourself.
Sure. All
right. So you give Challengers a 4?
Yeah, I gave it a 4.
Is it your number one movie of the year?
It's not.
Oh, fuck you, Wes.
Fine, I'll tell you right now. It's Dune.
Oh, okay, you're forgiven.
Yeah, it's my top movie of the year so far. This is not a 5.
Could you imagine you went the whole year with no 5s?
I don't even know if that's possible. I wonder what the fewest 5s. I've given few. I don't think I've given even close to none. I don't know. Maybe the closest is like 2020. Palm Springs, Dick Johnson is dead. Those might have been the only two.
That's a cheat year, though.
Yeah, definitely a cheat year. 2018, I hadn't seen Into the Spider-Verse. And the only one I can really remember is 8th grade that I gave a 5 to. I'm not totally sure.
I could go back and take a look through mine. actually fairly quickly, but I won't. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. That's it for me. So on to you.
All right, let's get into a 2024 film I saw called The Fall Guy.
Nice.
A down-and-out stuntman must find the missing star of his ex-girlfriend's blockbuster film. This stars Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt and is being marketed expertly. The marketing campaign for The Fall Guy has been spectacular as Gosling and Blunt have won over the populace with their chemistry off-screen. And it matches their chemistry on-screen. This movie is a lot of fun. My problem with the movie is I went in with a little bit high of an expectation being directed by David Leitch, who did Atomic Blonde and Bullet Train. So I was going in thinking that I'm going to see a fairly high action film in regards to some incredibly choreographed fights. And that is not this movie at all. So I was kind of let down by my own expectations.
Just a case study in why going in blind is often a good idea.
I not even blind, just like it's like going not quite to this extreme, but this is the best example I can give off the top of my head. It's like going into a Tarantino film and finding out it's silent.
Could you imagine if he made a silent film for his last movie?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be fucked up. Yeah. So it'd be like going into a Sorkin scripted film and it's silent.
Yeah.
There's no walk and talks.
Mm-hmm.
So with this, to say that the stunt work wasn't impressive is wrong. What I was just expecting more of like a fight film, considering fucking Bullet Train and Atomic Blonde. This is a very fun, very enjoyable action film with some really great comedic scenes. There is a scene, and I'm not spoiling anything, there is a scene, because he is a stuntman. So there's a scene where he is lit on fire and he has to do the take several times. Mm. That is fucking hilarious. I won't spoil what makes it funny, but that's the scene and it is thoroughly enjoyable. The movie is expertly shot. It is a complete love letter to stunt people and they make that known. They actually went and I found out that I think it's on every print, but before the movie starts, David Leitch and Ryan Gosling come on screen before the movie starts and thank everybody for coming to watch their movie.
Oh, that's
and
great.
Talk about how it is a love letter to stunt people.
I love that.
This movie is a lot of fun, 100%. I would say for the majority of people that watch this movie, they're going to have a great fucking time and it's probably an easy 4. For me, it was a 3 because I was hoping for more action in regards to more, basically kind of just more fighting. A la Atomic Blonde and Bullet Train. And that wasn't this. This was just a really great and very enjoyable action. Gosling is unbelievable, as always.
I love that man so much.
Yeah. Yeah. If you like Gosling, you're going to have a great fucking time at The Fall Guy. Definitely worth seeing on the big screen. I don't even know. Do you know that this is actually based off of a TV show?
I don't know that.
Okay, no. I watched this TV show.
Oh, okay.
And so I
Is a TV show called The Fall Guy?
Yes, it is. Okay. I flipped out twice. One, because in the show The Fall Guy, he has an iconic truck. Mm-hmm. Right there.
And he's pointing to his computer screen.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, oh, there's the scene. They won't spoil it there. Yeah. The truck, so this movie is set in Australia. So it's like in Australia. So the truck from the TV show is only at the beginning of the film when he's in North America, and then when he's down the States. So when I saw the truck, I lost my shit.
Mm-hmm.
And Mushy had no idea what I was cheering about. And then, of course, it's not a big spoiler, but if the cameo from the original star shows up, and I lost my mind.
Oh, cool.
I was really fucking excited when he showed up. And I'm pretty sure that 90% of the people in the theater had no idea who he is.
Hmm.
So yeah, Fall Guy, 3 out of 5. I guarantee you for most people this is a 4. It's an absolute fucking blast. It didn't meet the expectations I had, and that's my own fault.
Yeah, and again, that's why we like to go into movies without expectations, if at all possible. It's often impossible, because how can you not have expectations about something you're going to see? But you know, keeping it to a minimum can heighten your enjoyment.
I also want to point that it won't be much of a request because it starts right away, but they do have behind the scenes footage playing out while the credits are going.
Oh, cool.
And it's all behind the scenes of how the stunts were done.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
It was fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was just looking through my my own Letterboxd stats to see years that I had 5 stars. The ones that I probably had the fewest were...
You're doing that now. What a fucking dick move.
2020, I had Palm Springs, Dick Johnson is Dead. I also had Mangrove, Trial of the Chicago 7, and added on The Invisible Man, upgraded it to a 5 after the fact.
Oh, I bet you The Invisible Man would be a 5 on a rewatch for me.
It's a great movie. 2021 also, if you don't include the Bo Burnham comedy special, documentary, whatever you want to call it, then I only have Coda, Belfast, and then Marcel the Shell didn't even originally get a 5. It got upgraded after the fact.
Belfast got a 5. I fucking forgot that. Yeah,
Belfast was great, man. A lot of people kind of dismiss that as Oscar bait, but I really enjoyed that movie.
Fucking Oscar bait. People are fucking stupid.
Yeah.
All right. Next movie I watched. I watched this in anticipation of our review coming later this week. I watched the 1997 animated film Ants.
Oh.
A rather neurotic ant tries to break from his totalitarian. Thank you.
Yeah.
Society while trying to win the affection of the princess he loves. I hadn't seen this since it came out in 97. I rented it. I had a free rental from Cineplex, and I wanted to watch this to be able to compare and contrast to A Bug's Life.
I've got
to
start using my free rentals, by the way. I have long neglected to do that, and I do buy the combos.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah.
So, as soon as I pressed play, I was immediately reminded that I'm about to hate this movie.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen this since I was a kid. Maybe not ever. I've heard it's bad.
It is. But not... It's not the movie's fault. It's the casting, because Woody Allen is the lead character.
Eish.
And he's fucking Woody Allen in this fucking movie, who I fucking hate. I fucking hate. And I had a discussion with Kyle at work. It was either yesterday or today, most likely yesterday. Why do I keep subjecting myself to Woody Allen films? Right now it's just the completionist in me. I've watched a bunch of his films. He keeps getting nominated. I'm gonna fucking watch him. This movie is really bad. I watched this before I watched Bug's Life, and even before then, even in my memory, I could see the difference in the level of animation. This looks like the kind of movie they slapped together quickly to get on Netflix for the kids.
Hmm.
I could not believe how poor the animation was. I understand it's 97. CGI, full-length CGI films have only been around for 3 years at this point, with Toy Story in 95. With that being said, their dialogue and their lips did not sync up way too often. It looked like you were watching a foreign film.
It's not good.
The animation is so bad, and it's just a bad movie. The only good thing about it was Gene Hackman as General Mandible. He was unfucking believable. Great fucking actor, doing great fucking voice work. The rest of the movie is horseshit. Do not watch this. Avoid at all costs. 2 out of 5.
Dude, Woody Allen, Sharon Stone, Dan Aykroyd, Danny Glover, Gene Hackman, Sylvester Stallone, Jennifer Lopez, Christopher Walken.
Yep.
That's a crazy cast.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a wild cast.
Yeah.
I have nothing to add about this because I don't remember anything about it, or maybe even haven't seen it at all. It's difficult to say. What I will say is that if this movie gave us anything, it's one of the greatest quotes from The Office, which is actually one of the ones that's not very often quoted, so you might not even be familiar. But Michael Scott has a great talking head interview about the movie Ants.
Okay.
And it's fantastic. It's about a minute long.
Okay.
If you ever get the chance to watch it, you should. You probably won't, but...
Won't. So, with the 1998 miniseries officially starting in a few days' time, I had to get a head start, as I believe at last count my watch list for 1998 is sitting at 124. Considering it looks like I average about 70 plus films, I need to start working hard to knock some down. So I've been getting the shitty ones out of the way. And so the only reason I chose this is I had a limited window. I needed a short film. And I've been trying to be open to revisiting films I didn't like in the hopes that perhaps I will like them more.
How's that working out for you?
Not well, as I watched The Waterboy. A waterboy for a college football team discovers he has a unique tackling ability and becomes a member of the team.
I'm sorry, I have to read the top Letterboxd review for this movie.
Please do.
This is from Mario. It simply says, "Dear Waterboy, eat shit and kill yourself. Signed, everybody."
Wow. that's in the movie.
Yeah, I have to imagine it's a reference to the movie, but out of context, without having seen this, it plays fantastically.
Yeah. I'm not an Adam Sandler comedy fan. And this was fucking hard to watch. The movie is exactly 1 hour and 30 minutes long. Now, whether or not that includes credits, I have no idea. But it was about 15, 20 minutes in that I realized, as I sometimes do with these quote-unquote comedy classics, I haven't laughed yet. So I decided, I'm like, I'm actually going to mark down when I laugh for the first time. I'm still waiting.
Nice.
I did not laugh once. I didn't chuckle. I think it garnered a couple smiles, but that's it. This movie was an atrocity to me. This movie was a colossal waste of my time. I truly wish I had listened to my gut and not watched it. I did. So it's now out of the way. Thankfully, again, it was exactly 90 minutes, so it was over quickly. I just do not like Adam Sandler comedies, but I will continue to watch them going forward as we cover the years, as I try to be open to the chance that maybe a revisit of something I didn't enjoy will rekindle something that perhaps will connect with me this time. The Waterboy was not the case in this. The one thing I will say is one of his teammates on that college team was stirring something in my memory. And it just so happens, I'm not including it in what we've been watching, but last night I watched Death Proof with Kyle when he was here, and a character in that, this cross-eyed character, played this character named Jed in The Waterboy. And as soon as I saw the scene coming up, I was like, oh my God, that's where I recognize the guy from The Waterboy. Waterboy, 1 out of 5.
Yeah. And at the second that you posted the poster in the group chat to announce that you were watching it, I responded, I predict a 1. Did not think you would enjoy this movie. You don't like even some of the Adam Sandler movies that are considered among the best.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not including in that like Uncut Gems or
that's not a comedy.
Or Punch Drunk Love. No. That's Adam Sandler comedies.
Either. Yes.
I think you even usually the ones that people go are like, oh, well, what about blank? The only two that you ever hear there are Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore. And I happen to remember you gave Billy Madison a 1.
Yeah. Yeah. Hated it. And Happy Gilmore.
You gave it a 3.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
Happy Gilmore's got some really funny moments.
It does.
I think I can't remember if it's a 3 or a 4 for me. I think it's a 3 for me as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The last film I want to talk about is the 10th film in John McTiernan's filmography. As I continue to watch the follow along with the podcast Blank Check, and Sam looked over and gave it, you probably saw my score on it.
Yeah, I saw it in the group chat the other day.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. Yes. So his 10th film is a film called Rollerball. The big thing in 2005 is a violent sport which can have some pretty serious consequences. Like dying. This has a Metascore of 14. 14.
Oh, no.
Yes. If you take a look at Letterboxd,
it's even lower.
It's lower? It's 1.8?
It's 1.8, which would be a 9 out of 100, right? Is that right? No. Sorry, that's not. That's the opposite.
That's a 36.
Direction. 36. Sorry, yes. I divided by 2 instead of multiplying by 2.
This movie's garbaggio.
Mm-hmm.
This movie isn't even so bad it's good. You could not even watch this movie
in some type of inebriated form to get enjoyment. It's not even so bad that there's things to make fun of. It is flat out fucking bad. Flat out fucking bad. This was tough to sit through. Thankfully, this was only 98 minutes long. This has cameos from Slipknot, Pink, and Shane McMahon.
Okay.
Now, when I mean cameos, Pink is apparently singing on some type of video. You don't hear her. You only see her on another screen. Slipknot is playing at the venue, and Shane McMahon has no lines. He just kind of looks over when the only person who realizes what movie he's in, and that is Jean Reno, who's having the fucking time of his life, does something incredibly crazy. This movie is utter and complete dog shit. I can't stress enough how bad this movie is. Do not ever watch it. I'd heard this movie was bad. It's worse than what I thought it was. This is easily one of the most horribly put together films I've ever seen. The very fact that this is directed by John McTiernan, who was a master of tension, a master of spatial awareness. Remember how you always knew where John McClane was in the tower? Mm-hmm. He used the calendar. He used the elevator. Everything he used, so you knew where he was at all times. That's all fucking gone. How he ratcheted tension out of films like Predator and Die Hard and The Thomas Crown Affair and The Hunt for Red October. Yeah, he lost all that skill. There's no fucking tension in this movie whatsoever. This is horrible. This is easily one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And again, not in a fun way. Do not watch this movie. And yes, I'm talking to you, Kyle.
Oof.
1 out of 5.
He's not still making movies, right?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No.
Is he alive?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He's got one more movie left, which I have seen. I've only seen it once. I remember next to nothing on it, but there's no way it's going to be worse than this.
Don't speak too soon. Yeah, that sounds terrible.
It is. The thing is that the original that this is a remake of is regarded as a fairly good movie. And is one of the favorite films of a podcaster that I really love called Ben Simmons. And so I'm really, really interested to watch the original now to see, like, how bad did they – like, they obviously fucked up. So I want to see how bad they fucked up.
Hmm. Yeah. Slipknot is in this, hey?
It's like,
very strange.
As they're playing, like, in the arena as the game's going on. So you see them. That's it. Like, yeah. I don't even think you hear them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
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 That's too bad.
All right. Well, that wraps up what we've been watching, and that wraps up this week's edition of Real Talk. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, it does increase the profile of our podcast, allows more people to find us. We greatly appreciate any help we can get. You can also give us a rating on Spotify. While you're on Spotify, answer our weekly question. If you answer our weekly question, I promise to read it on air during a Real Talk episode. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sam_Manny_movie. You can follow us on Facebook at the Samuel Manny Movie Podcast. You can email us at sammannymoviepodcast@gmail.com. So, for Real Talk, I'm Manny Manuel.
I'm Sam Reimer.
Adios.